Your Amor. I'm Jeff Bell.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The Presidential Steering Committee has also stated that Nigeria will no longer accept vaccines with short shelf life, as they not only exert undue pressure on both the health system, but also on the people.
That's Dr. Faisal Shuaib, Executive Secretary for the body responsible for Nigeria's COVID-19 vaccinations, on the decision to destroy up to a million doses that had gone beyond their expiration date. Details coming up. Also, AIDS groups say drought and conflict in Mali have more than tripled. And Ugandan police confine opposition leader Bobby Wine to his house. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Russia's influence in the Central African Republic is growing as the country grapples with insurgents, according to the International Crisis Group. The CAR government hired the Wagner Group, a Russian mercenary contractor, for security. But Wagner's alleged rights violations against killing civilians, aid workers, and journalists have caused tension with CAR's Western supporters and uproar at home. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In the Central African Republic, the civilian population continues to suffer at the hands of armed groups in parts of the country. Last week, a rebel attack in the northwest killed at least 30 people. And from January to November, there were 387 violent incidents against humanitarian workers, according to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. The Central African nation is seeing an increase in violence as government forces, supported by Russian fighters, battle rebel groups who oppose President Faustin Archange Tondera rule. The CIA hired the Wagner Group, a Russian mercenary contractor for security. Pauline Bax, a senior editor and policy advisor at the International Crisis Group, says the mercenaries and other fighters have helped keep the current government in power.
A lot of the fighters are not necessarily Russian. There's apparently a Libyan contingent. There are Syrian fighters, people from Ukraine, and Chechen fighters as well. It's hard to get any clear idea of what they do exactly on the countryside, but they have been very successful in repelling rebels from most of the major towns. And this Wagner force, together with the National Army, has managed to secure a lot of mining zones as well as major towns in the country, which was unprecedented. This hasn't happened in Central African Republic in the last 20 years.
In January, the government forces and Russian soldiers carried out a counter-offensive against armed groups known as Coalition of Patriots for Change, pushing them out of the capital, Bangui. But reports of civilian abuses by the Russian mercenary group and government forces have overshadowed successes. In a June report, UN investigators highlighted human rights abuses and excessive force committed by the Russian mercenaries. The human rights researchers' report showed 6 civilians were killed inside a mosque in the Bambari and 3 others were killed in Ipe town. 2 of them were individuals with disabilities. The Russians arrived in the Central African Republic in 2017 after the meeting between President Faustin Archange Touadéra and Russia's foreign minister. Russian donated weapons to CAR's weak military and provided 175 military instructors. Since then, the number of Russian instructors has grown to 1,200. Tobias Wellner is a sub-Saharan Africa senior intelligence analyst with the Dragonfly Intelligence, a group that works on global security and political risks. He says that Wagner's group records in other countries show they work with Russia's security systems.
For some of Wagner's actions, for example, in Ukraine and Syria, there's certainly been support between Wagner's mercenary forces and Russian troops. To a certain degree, we can say that Russia is probably using Wagner as a foreign policy tool. it allows sort of Russia to deepen connections in defense and resource sectors where Wagner is operating.
The group's security service has attracted some African governments like Mali and Sudan. Wellner says governments who lack proper governance structure will attract mercenary groups who are accountable to no one.
Like military training and support missions paid by Western governments would. Wagner's advantage as a Russian company is probably also that within Russia, there are less questions asked about the company. So there's less scrutiny for Wagner as a private company back at home in Russia.
The group was deployed in Mozambique to combat the Islamic State terror group operating in the country's north. The Wagner group evacuated its fighters in November 2019 after dozens of them were killed. In the Central African Republic, rebel groups are gathering again to fight the government troops and Russians. Barks of ICG says the existence of rebels in the country poses a threat to the government.
But now the rebels are gathering more in strength and launching ambushes on army forces and on mercenary troops as well, and increasingly using improvised explosive devices. So a lot of the fighting continues to this day in areas that are very remote and hard to access. And the general understanding is that if the mercenary force would no longer be there, there would be a clear threat to the government and to President Touadera.
Some experts say Russia's influence in Africa is limited, unlike the Chinese, who are involved in infrastructure projects and trade, and Western governments that help fund many governments' projects. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Tunisian President Kais Saied announced a national constitutional referendum last night, almost 5 months after dismissing his government and granting himself sweeping powers in the North African country. He said parliament will remain suspended until legislative elections planned for December 17, 2022. Saied said a popular consultation will be organized starting next month, leading to the referendum on July 25th, the first anniversary of the day he seized power, and will provide the framework for the elections. Armed groups have clashed in southern Libya just a week before the country's presidential election. The French news agency AFP reports that gunmen linked to Libyan military chief Khalifa Haftar exchanged artillery and gunfire overnight around the city of Sabha, with medics reporting one person dead. Schools and public services are closed across Sabha today. Observers fear the latest skirmish could trigger a return to conflict after a year-long ceasefire. Khalifa Haftar in 2019 seized much of southern Libya, including oil infrastructure, military sites, and Sabha, then launched a blistering assault in the capital, Tripoli. Western Libyan forces pushed him back to his eastern stronghold a year later, but he retained an armed presence in the south. A ceasefire formally signed in October 2020 paved the way for a UN-led political process to bring in an interim unity government tasked with leading Libya until the elections, in which Haftar is a candidate. Aid groups say drought and conflict in Mali have more than tripled the number of people going hungry in the past year. Rising prices of staple foods forced the government this week to halt exports of millet, corn, and rice, and food shortages are expected to spread. Annie Rittenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
22 non-governmental organizations signed a press release this week highlighting the rapidly worsening food crisis in Mali that has left 1.2 million people facing hunger amid widespread insecurity and drought. The Malian government halted all exports of millet, corn, and rice in an official letter published on Monday, signed by Mali's Minister of Industry and Commerce, Mohamed Ould Mohamed. Speaking to Reuters, he said, "The suspension aims to anticipate the cereal crisis, which is looming on the international market, to protect national production in the most disadvantaged segments of the population. The effects are already being felt by citizens in Gao, one of Mali's largest northern cities." Usman Maiga, a Gao resident and the Secretary General of the Gao Region Civil Society, told VOA that oil, sugar, millet, and rice prices have risen sharply in recent months. He says the poor condition of roads between the capital and Gao has further complicated the situation. Micah says that a large family in Mali, where multiple generations often live under the same roof, can easily consume 100 kilos of rice in a month. That, he says, can now consume most of the family's income. He says, for example, if you have a monthly salary of 100,000 West African francs and you're in a house, because you have to also know, even rent is expensive here because of the crisis and all that. If you're in a house that's 50,000 per month, and a sack of rice is 45,000, you only have 5,000 left over. It's done, he says. You've paid your rent and you've bought a sack of rice, but you don't have any money left. But 100,000 West African francs, the equivalent of about $172, is more than many Malians will see in a month. According to USAID, nearly half of Malians live in extreme poverty, and most Malians work in agriculture. The press release said 3 million people have been affected by recent drought. Mali is also home to 400,000 internally displaced persons driven from their homes by ongoing violence, who are all vulnerable to food shortages. Tom Per Costa of the Norwegian Refugee Council, speaking via a messaging app from Geneva, says his group's projections are even worse for next year, forecasting a 58% increase in the number of people facing hunger.
What is needed now, for sure, is of course also more support from the international community. Basically, right now, the food security response is only funded 25%, and we are in December, and it's for the whole year, so it's not going to improve. It means that it's lacking 75% of the money to make sure that people have enough food to eat. So that's something that needs to be addressed, because you can escape from violence, you can escape from climate change, but you cannot really escape from international neglect.
Mali is currently under military rule, and elections were scheduled to be held in February. The prime minister said in September that elections may be delayed. Mali's current leaders now have to manage a food crisis, in addition to the ongoing security crisis in the country's central regions. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
The Nigerian government has confirmed a Reuters report that up to 1 million doses of anti-COVID vaccines supplied to the country expired last month, a development blamed on their short shelf life. Authorities say all expired medication has been withdrawn and will be destroyed. From Abuja, Nigeria, Monachi Chooks has the details.
Dr. Faisal Shuaibu, the executive secretary of the body responsible for vaccinations, the National Primary Health Care Development Agency, made the disclosure at a news conference in Abuja on Monday.
The general public needs to be clear on the fact that we have never and will never allow any expired COVID-19 vaccines to be used in Nigeria. I want to assure Nigerians and the global community that our COVID-19 vaccine rollout is built on strong principles of safety, transparency, integrity, and accountability.
Shuaibu also said that a change in government policy would keep the situation from happening again.
The Presidential Steering Committee has also stated that Nigeria will no longer accept vaccines with short shelf life, as they not only exert undue pressure on both the health system, but also on the people. Due to vaccine scarcity in the past, we had previously been accepting vaccines with short shelf lives.
The World Health Organization says 7 million Nigerians, or less than 4% of the country's more than 200 million people, have been vaccinated. The government is calling on all those eligible to take advantage of the ongoing mass vaccination campaign to get their regular doses as well as booster shots. Dr. Ndeyo Ekwot is the acting executive secretary, Abuja Primary Health Care Board. He says vaccination rates are likely to improve.
So we have moved from hesitancy to acceptance all over, and it is no more fashionable for anybody to show evidence or to even show that he or she is hesitant.
Some observers say lack of fuel to refrigerate the vaccines is part of the problem. But Dr. Ekwot traces the expiration of the vaccines to time factors and logistics. is calling on manufacturers to avoid stocking supplies for too long a time before distributing them.
And what we are having now is just like rollover from the stock that came late. So you cannot put the country online that we allowed vaccines to expire. When did the vaccine come? When did we have the agreement for the vaccines to be sent to us? And when did it come? If the vaccine is expiring in 3 months, it should come to us hot from the manufacturers.
Reuters says its sources told them that the expired doses were made by AstraZeneca and donated by European nations through the COVAX vaccine sharing facility. The newswire says an official count is ongoing. The National Primary Health Care Development Agency says the medication will be disposed of once the move is cleared by the National Agency for Food and Drug Administration and Control and the Abuja Environmental Protection Board. For VOA News, Munachi Chooks.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Russia's influence in the Central African Republic is growing. Aid groups say drought and conflict in Mali have more than tripled. And Tunisia's president announces a national constitutional referendum. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Ugandan police confined opposition leader Bobi Wine to his house today to prevent him from leading a rally for his party's candidate in a local election. Ugandan police acknowledge the political nature of their act. More from Halima Atumani in Kampala.
Ugandan police say they got credible information that the head of the opposition National Unity Platform Party was planning a procession from his home to the Kayunga district in eastern Uganda. Robert Chagulanyi, better known as Bobi Wine, wanted to rally support for his party's candidate, who is running in a by-election for the local district chairperson seat. Wine described to VOA what he woke up to Tuesday morning.
Waking up in the morning, you know, we were all surrounded by heavy deployment of soldiers and police officers. Our entire fence has been cordoned off. The roads leading to our house have been roadblocked. Nobody's allowed to come in or go out. When my security guard and my gardener went to check what's happening, they were rounded up, beaten, and put in waiting vans. We don't know where they've driven them to.
Deputy Police Spokesperson Lucas Owosijire confirms the deployment around Bobi Wine's house.
The Honorable had plans of organizing a procession from his home area to Kayunga. So we basically deployed to deter that from happening.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni was expected to visit Kayunga later Tuesday, just one day after Prime Minister Robin Anabanja was in the district to canvass support for the ruling National Resistance Movement Party candidate. Wine describes his confinement as an example of dictatorial rule in Uganda and says it shows the one-sidedness of the election.
You wonder why it is not acceptable for me, a party president of a competing party, to show up and garner support for my candidate. It shows you the lawlessness under which we are subjected.
This is not the first time Wine is being placed under effective house arrest. After Uganda's general election January 14th, Wine was placed under house arrest until a court ordered the withdrawal of security forces from his home 2 weeks later. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Botswana has put 294 elephant licenses up for sale for the hunting season that starts in April. An auction has opened in Habrone, with bidders expected to buy licenses on Friday for resale to international hunters. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
The auction will see 83 elephants divided into 8 packages, with each bundle containing at least 10 of the animals. The reserve price for each package has been set at $200,000, with successful bidders then selling the licenses to international hunters. Last season, hunters from abroad paid up to $43,000 to shoot one elephant. The remaining elephant licenses will be sold through auctions at the community level across the country. Botswana Wildlife Producers Association Chief Executive Isaac Theophilus says they are looking forward to a successful season.
Of course, the association would have liked the auctions to have been held a bit earlier, but still it's an improvement from last year. The auctions would enable the operators to go to the conventions with information on the quotas that they would be having, and that will also enable timely preparations by the operators for the opening of the hunting season in April.
He adds they expect improved consultations with the Department of Wildlife on the hunting season structure.
We look forward to improved working relationships going into the new year, going into the future. The association is a representative body of about 150 members or so, and we still want more members to come in. We will be going on a recruitment drive because we want game ranchers and professional hunters to speak with one strong voice when dealing with wildlife conservation matters and lobbying governments.
The hunts have been criticized by conservationists who argue they will affect elephant populations. Mep Ives is a local conservationist who has more than 4 decades in wildlife management. He says the annual hunting of about 300 elephants will not adversely impact Botswana's large herd, estimated at more than 130,000.
300 elephants removed from the population of northern Botswana is, in fact, a very, very low number. It will have virtually no effect on the population or the population growth, for that matter. So from that perspective, it is definitely sustainable.
However, Ives says hunting mature elephant bulls might have an impact on the genetic composition of the elephant population in the future. He says ideally, elephant of both sexes, not just bulls, should be offered to hunters.
We've lost probably most of the strong genetics. And although we are still getting an infusion from probably Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, we are killing the genetic base as quick as they come in. So I think what's left behind from a genetic perspective is not sustainable. In the ideal world, we should rather be offering maybe 500 elephants a year, but of all sexes.
Botswana reintroduced trophy hunting in 2019, with President Mokgweetsi Masisi indicating the move was meant to benefit communities that have been impacted by human wildlife conflict. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
In a joint operation with Niger, Burkina Faso's armed forces have killed almost 100 militants in the two countries' border zone. The operation ran from November 25 to December 9th, according to Reuters, and also arrested about 20 suspects, seized guns and hundreds of motorcycles, and destroyed about 15 improvised explosive devices. Islamist militants linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State have been waging an insurgency in Burkina Faso, Niger, and neighboring Mali for the last 2 years. They have killed thousands of civilians and displaced about 2 million. Last Friday, Burkina Faso's government announced the formation of a new cabinet with the appointment of a new prime minister. President Roch Kabore fired his last prime minister this month after the country's escalating security crisis led to street protests and calls for him to resign. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, Thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.